You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and it is Friday, September 7,325th, 1993. And what does that mean? I'll tell you in just a minute. Friday, September 7,325th, 1993, it was 20 years ago this month that a phenomenon began on the internet called Eternal September. Now, what is Eternal September and what does it mean to us today? Actually, it means a little bit. Eternal September is a phrase given to the fact that before 1993, the internet was limited pretty much to people who were using it in a professional capacity or in an academic capacity, and that included universities. And in September, every year, new people would come onto the internet and they would have to learn the rules of etiquette, because before 1993, there actually were rules of etiquette on the internet. And after that, a little company called America Online came along, and the internet opened up to everybody who could afford it. And at first, that wasn't absolutely everybody, of course, but it did mean that the number of internet users in the mid-90s skyrocketed, and politeness on the internet died a horrible death. And so some people who are a little bit miffed about that continue to count the time on the internet from September of 1993. And there's a little website that tells us it is Friday, September 7,325th. And you can actually go to this website and access BBS-style online sites similar to the ones that you existed back in the day that are purely for the purpose of information exchange. Now, I mention that today because over the past couple of weeks during our first month of classes here at UBC, and we here at CITR 101.9 FM are a UBC campus radio station here in Vancouver, and there's been a little bit of news coverage of certain chants that had happened during Frosh Week and the like. Now, by all means, have fun when it's your first few weeks of university, especially if it's your first time away from home and the like. It's really fun. And as you're trying to explore your identity, perhaps your behavior will move into certain extremes. Now, that's all fine and that happens. But in this day and age, with the internet being what it is, you can end up having consequences to your behaviors that will stick to you and follow you around, thanks primarily to the internet, for a very long time. Now, I happen to know, having graduated with a Bachelor of Education here from UBC in 2011, that members of my cohort actually had huge fights with image posting boards to get pictures of them taken down because they wanted to apply for jobs as teachers, and there were certain pictures that existed of them that were, shall we say, less than professional. Now, we all have our moments of weakness, but do remember in this day and age that anything that you do can be tagged and follow you around for a very long time, and the ephemeral nature of the internet might not protect you there. And even if it's not you posting it on Facebook, the way that facial recognition software works nowadays, if anybody posts it and tags you, then there you are, a record that links to you. And it never goes away. And it never has to legally prove anything to you, but like potential employers, potential anybody who sees these pictures of you 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, these are not the sorts of things that you can tell later in life as an anecdote and whitewash it. This is stuff that can hurt you. And it has, I know, hurt younger people that I've gone through schooling with. So just as a bit of a public announcement, be careful with what you do, especially in environments where you're thinking a little bit less of self-restraint and a little bit more of having fun. Do be careful that you might incur penalties that far outstrip the nature of even your indiscretion. You know, it might not have been that bad, but if it looks bad to an employer, or an employer that you might want to work with 10 years down the road, then there's not much that you can do about it anymore, the online social media being what it is. So when you're thinking of that sort of thing, keep it in mind. Now let's move on to something really cool. We had, in recent times, an interview with some of the series producers of the people who are making an online web series called Blank Verse. And this is really great because this is not the first time we've been able to cover the production of an online web series. So we have the interview coming up, and that's going to start in just a second here at CITR 101.9 at Scalds Hall. I'm your host, Brian McDonald, by the way. And yes, this is my first show back with a regular time slot. And just coming up after this these messages, we're going to have some of the creators of Blank Verse. So don't go away.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
The Carl Sagan Association will be screening Carl Sagan's Cosmos series on September 23rd from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Norm Theater in the UBC sub. Our club's goal is to promote engagement with the sciences among students from all faculties. For more details, visit ubcsagan.org.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here with our guest, Amanda Konkin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Oh, I'm really doing well.
Excellent.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name's Amanda Konkin. I'm the creator and executive producer of Blank Verse, which is a web series based on the life of William Shakespeare and his contemporaries reimagined as modern-day university students. So I myself am a graduate of the University of British Columbia. I have a master's degree in theater with a focus on digital media studies. And I'm trying to bring all of those things into this project and create something really interesting for the web.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to go into a life of creativity?
Because I couldn't do anything else. And I think that that's the key to being an artist, is you do it because you can't imagine another life. I just was drawn to it. I did community theater for decades. And when I came out to UBC, I originally started with a political science degree. And I got near the end of that and just realized it wasn't what I wanted to do. And when I was done, the only thing I could think of was that the arts and people that I found in theater and in creative pursuits were who I wanted to spend my life surrounded by. So I jumped into that field head first. I got my master's degree, worked with amazing people here at the university, the theater department. Fantastic, made amazing connections, and just have fostered those over the years to start creating things with people that are like-minded. And I think once you find a community that you love and connect with, it's really hard to not be a part of it anymore.
Tell us a little bit about Blank Verse.
That's one of those things about who you hang around with. I had an idea from the things that I've experienced online, and there's a great community of people that are developing web series, and particularly people that are interested in the literary arts and repurposing classic media for web series. And particularly, I was inspired by the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which is a fabulous online web series that actually recreates Pride and Prejudice, the novel, through a series of vlogs and other transmedia elements. And I was really inspired by the fact that people could take these classic works and reach a new audience through them. And it was similar to what I was doing in my theater studies, where I was interested in this really ancient form of storytelling. But in a digital media age, how do you combine those two elements? So I was really inspired by this. And then obviously Shakespeare is a huge part of my studies and my life being a theater student. And I was mentioning this idea that I had to one of my friends right before I went on vacation about Shakespeare's life and all of the people that were surrounding him. And people don't know who Ben Jonson and Thomas Kidd are. I think that people need to know this. It's really interesting. We should do something. And then I left for a week and he told everybody about it. And when I came back, we had a team together that were so keen on this idea. Obviously, surround yourself with people that like the same things you do and you can create amazing things. So that's the genesis. It just sort of snowballed from there and more people came on board and were really excited by this idea and we wanted to make it happen. So we did.
Can you tell us who is on your team?
I sure can. So I actually started a media company in 2012 called Four Geeks Media with Geneviève Bolduc, Ryan Caron, and Andrew Lynch. So the four of us have been creating work for the internet for a while. And we're the ones that sort of are, we bounce ideas off each other all the time and we come up with new things. So it was actually initially Andrew Lynch and Ryan Caron who I told the idea to and started spreading it. And then they got other people on board. So our Will Shakespeare is Xander Williams, who's also a graduate here from the University of British Columbia in the Bachelor of Fine Arts acting program. And then Charlie Allison is our cinematographer, and she is a graduate of the film program here at UBC. So she's taken on everything in terms of the look of the show. So we also have Laura McLean working as our transmedia producer, and she's a graduate as well from the university. And so the five of us, I think, are the four people plus the extra people that we brought on board, we make sort of a core team. And then, of course, we have a sound designer who's just been absolutely fabulous in making a lot of these things come together, David Cowling, who's been working with us to make the show sound as amazing as it does. Our editor is Nicholas Ayerby. I apologize, I may have pronounced that wrong, but he's also from UBC. And then we have Asher Innesbrook, I think is how you pronounce the last name. And so those three are rounding out our post-production team. And then, of course, we have fabulous costume designers, Laura Fukumoto and Jen Waterhouse are heading up our costume team. And then we have makeup artists, and Carolyn Rapanos is our set designer and production design that she's doing. And oh my goodness, now that you're making me list them all, I feel like I might forget somebody, so my apologies. It's a great big solid team that everybody's coming together and bringing in people that they know. So I know that Carolyn's bringing in people, and Jen's bringing in people, Laura's bringing in people. So the team just keeps growing with solid people that are taking agency over their own work and really wanting to see this thing come to life. So as far as a core team, those are the people that are taking a lot of charge of the situation and bringing in people that are inspired by the show and going from there.
Is this the first project that your team has done?
For this particular show, yes. Like I say, the four of myself, Ryan, Genevieve, and Andrew have worked together for a while and in different capacities with various people on this project. So we actually found David, our sound designer, from Ryan, who was working on a theater project in town, and our costume designer worked on projects with various people, and we brought her on board. So we find people through different things that we've worked with before and really trusted. So that was the big thing, putting this team together and getting it off the ground, was who can we bring on board? Who do we trust? Who can make the best art that we want to create? So it really was people that we'd worked with before and people that we were excited by what they created and people that really wanted to be invested in the project. We've all worked with most people in some capacity or another on different projects.
Do you have anything up online yet?
We sure do. So our season, actually, season one, is airing from August 25th until December 29th. So it'll air every single Sunday online. So you can find information on our website, which is blankverse.tv. We're also on YouTube. If you search Blankverse TV, basically search Blankverse TV and you'll find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Tumblr, lots of things out there. So that's when the content's going to come up most regularly. Each of our acts, so it's the first season is in five acts, and we have different writers and different directors on board for each act of the project that will air throughout the first season. And we also have transmedia elements. So like I mentioned, Laura McLean is our transmedia producer, and her job is to fill out the world of these characters. So for example, our Will Shakespeare, has a blog. So you can go on to his blog and find out what he's been doing behind the scenes. That's Will Shakespeare Writes .wordpress.com. So he's posting things on there. And we have Georgia Roberta Greenpeel, one of our main characters. She is very active on social media, Twitter. She also created her own fan site for Chris Marlowe because she's really into Chris Marlowe's work and has created some fan art that, again, people behind the scenes, we have Laura Fukumoto and Matt Resnick actually got together and made some art that we are putting on the site as Georgia's. So people in the project are pulling together from all sorts of different areas and combining to make the best project possible. So we're really getting our characters out there on Twitter and trying to create a world that exists outside of the main content on the show as well. So we really hope people will engage that way. And then our biggest transmedia element is the Messenger Speech, which is our student newspaper at the university that Will Shakespeare attends. And that's run by Georgia Roberta Greenpeel, one of our characters in our show. And it, I'm really excited about this element, will feature interviews with a lot of the characters that populate Shakespeare's world. So it's this idea of where did the inspiration from people that he wrote come from? So, for example, we have the student council presidents that will be running, which are some kings from some of his works. So you'll get to see maybe that's where an inspiration came from. So we really liked taking these elements and these characters from Shakespeare's plays and seeing how we could also fit them into a story that's mostly about the historical figures of Shakespeare's life. But we also wanted to find these amazing and fantastic fictional characters that he created and fit them into the world as well. So that's mostly done through our transmedia and our background world. And all the information about that is on our website as well. So we have the full list of the historical figures, and then we also have a full list of the background characters that create this background world and everybody that you'll see on the messenger speech.
Well, this sounds like a very, very ambitious project.
It is, yeah.
What was it like to try to get this off the ground?
Oh, man. Like I say, I think it sort of snowballed. And once people, it's really hard. It's so easy to get people excited about this project, which I think is the coolest part, that you just, the tagline itself, you know, William Shakespeare in a modern day university student. And people get really excited about that if they have a history with Shakespeare or know about him at all. So it's hard to stop it once it starts going. And so it was about finding spaces, and we had the people and the materials to create the show, and we had keen writers that really wanted to get this script off the ground. So we've assigned different parts of the scripts and different parts of the story to different people, which will help us facilitate it, because we know that we have a lot of story to cover here. So that's why we have broken things down. We really wanted to emulate a television model. That's the thing that I'm most familiar with in terms of media. I really relate to a television model. I really like long-form storytelling, and I really like the idea that you can have pre-production happening at the same time as post-production if you have different teams on board. So that in that sense, we really created this five-act structure where we could have a director and a writer working with our pre-production team on one act, while we have a different director and a different writer working with our post-production team to finish the act that they just filmed. So it allows sort of a breakdown in the structure to get everything completed on time and make sure that things are getting filmed when they need to get filmed and getting put up when they need to get put up. So that's making things a little bit easier for us. It's also making things a little bit harder for us. We have to make sure that our scheduling is right and that everybody's working on the part of the project that they need to be working on at that moment. But we're trying, and I think it's working really well for us so far. It allows us to keep creating amazing things. And the biggest part that makes this project actually possible is the delegation of roles to different people, so that everybody has agency over the thing that they're in charge of and really does their best to make that as great as they can. So that's probably one of the greatest things when we're going forward, is making sure that people are proud of what they're making, and they want to come back each week and answer a million emails and make sure that things are on track for the next episodes.
Reminds me a little bit of Macbeth. Vaulting ambition. I have one more question about the scope of this particular project. I know from an interview I did a couple of months ago with the web series group Standard Action that it's not particularly cheap to do this, even by web series standards. It's not as expensive as traditional television mm-hmm. at times. But what was it like to finance this project?
Well, our first season is working on a beg, borrow, and steal model. We are doing it as a passion project. And basically, the biggest thing is man hours and favors and the support of the Vancouver theater community and the film community and people just being really excited about this project and willing to contribute to it. We are making the first season basically with what we can make it with. So we have a few resources, and everybody's donating their time and energy to this, because what we eventually want is we want to connect with audiences, and we want them to take agency over this show and be really excited about it and help us keep making it. So our big end goal is to Kickstarter the project and get funding for a second season and keep going. We have potential for a lot of seasons for the show. We really want people to be invested in these characters. But we didn't want to do that first. We didn't want to say, hey, internet, give us some money and we're going to create something good. We wanted to first show people, look at what we can do with just our blood, sweat, and tears. And imagine if you give us a little bit of money and we'll make something really amazing for you. It's just eternal gratitude to everybody that's put forward things on this project. And it's amazing how resourceful people can be. A lot of us do come from theater, so we're used to a model with very little funding. So we are trying really hard to do the best that we can in the first season, make the best art that we can with the resources we have available to us, and then really switch that structure for a second season, become a little bit more substantial. And yeah, it does cost a lot. And we really obviously don't want to be doing this for the full creation of the series, because people have been so generous to us for this first season that we really do want to be able to pay everybody what they're worth and have this great production value. So that's our end goal, is eventually to emulate what Standard Action is doing and reach out to fans and hopefully build an audience that way and build some funding for it. We really have a lot of faith in the online community to recognize when people are making something that is beneficial. We think that there's smart viewers out there, there's viewers that are excited about the work that we're doing and recognize that we have the talent and the potential to make an amazing thing. So we really are hoping that people will see that and support us. Obviously, I've got a little bit of a producing background and I'm going through other channels for funding. The Vancouver and BC film community is very good at supporting emerging artists, but not as much as I would have hoped when we're going out on this project, because we are in this sort of nebulous space between being no longer students and out into the real world and not as established as a lot of production companies in Vancouver. So we're working in this nebulous space and really relying on a variety of resources to make the work that we want to make. But the biggest thing that I've realized in this project is that you can't stop people from making art. We just want to do something and we want to make it. And so if you just have a dedicated group of people doing that, it's amazing what people can accomplish. And it would be amazing to see what we could accomplish with some more money. So
this might be a bit far down the line, but have you thought about doing other projects beyond the Blank First one?
Yes, of course. I mean, I'm really interested in the potential of digital media and how you can storytell on the internet. I also like television models. The name that we're working under right now is Knick Knock Media, which is the company and the name that I've been working under for the last few years. I've done theater projects and a few film projects, but that in itself is sort of where my headspace is at. And as Knick Knock Media, we have a lot of ideas for maybe future theater projects that we want to work on and future film projects, again, based on completely different models. But also with Blank Verse, it's opened up this great world for, well, what would be a spinoff that Ben Johnson could maybe do and potential to tell different stories within the same world, which we're really excited about. That might be a little hint. Maybe there's some things in development right now that are within the same world, but beyond. And obviously, I mean, we do have a big goal with this project. I'm really hoping that we can create, there's 5 seasons in my head right now. I'm hoping that we can create all 5 of those, which will keep us busy for a very long time. And engage with different audiences. The greatest thing that I've found with this project is the opportunities that open up just by you start doing something and then you find something else as you're going along the way and somebody that's really interested in one thing and you have the potential to just grow exponentially. So we're really just open right now to whatever projects are coming our way. I know that there's lots of people on board with the project that are doing their own things on the side and are working on scripts and are working on project development. So everybody individually is working on their own projects, and then Knick Knock Media and a core group of producers there are working on various projects. Like I say, I also work with 4 Geeks Media doing West Coast geeks and events and culture. So that'll keep going and hopefully morph a little bit as we learn from what's working with Blank Verse and other things like that. Yeah, you'll see us. You'll see us around.
You touched on this just a little bit, but I want to follow up a little more. Do you have any further advice for people who might be thinking of getting involved in projects like these?
Find amazing people to work with. That's the one thing that has just absolutely blown my mind about this project is just the talent and dedication that people are showing for this project. And I mean, it took a long time. I've been out here in Vancouver for many years facilitating a lot of contacts and finding out who I work with and creating these really great partnerships with people just from various projects and realizing who you can work with and what creates the best thing that you can create. So find people that are in the same headspace as you that want to make similar things to you. And it's just, above all else, I think that it's the people that make the project worth doing. And again, that's what I say when going into theater is I went into it because of the people that I was there with. And it's always nice to have connections in the Vancouver theater community and the film community. So don't burn any bridges. Recognize that everybody that you meet as you're emerging in your art and in your field is somebody that can help you down the line, and recognize that you can contribute to a growing community of artists here in Vancouver, and that this community can also help you grow as an artist. So that was the biggest thing. And, you know, compile your resources. It took us a while. We have now equipment that various people have bought, and invest in your art. Invest in your art and recognize that if you have long-term goals and you recognize what you're working towards, that everything is going to help that. Because in the end, when the timing's right and things snowball, you'll have the resources to be able to make something. Even if it's not this huge film project or television show, you still have the resources and the connections to be able to do something. Do what you love, be passionate about it, and find people that are in the same space that you are.
We're going to be sharing links where people can find your work online, find the already produced episodes of Blank Verse. But I understand you also already have a radio presence as well.
We do. CITR has been so great to us so far. I know that the Arts Report has been really great. We repurposed our first episode to air on the Arts Report for back in August. So we did that when we were still in production for a lot of things and just launching our series. And it was such a great opportunity that we hadn't even thought of before. Our sound designer picked up the torch with this and ran with it and said, what a great opportunity. How can we make this work for the radio, for different audiences, and to really do a cross-platform project where people can engage with it in various capacities. So we are hoping to reformat the episodes and have them available for people that want to listen to it, if maybe web series isn't your thing and you really like to just the oral experience. So we'll create that hopefully as we move forward. I know that David's very keen on that. And the show does work really well. Obviously, it's about literary figures. They do talk a lot. There's lots of character development through the words, not just the visuals. So we are really hoping to move forward with that and hopefully have some things air on this show as well.
If we get anything from Blank Verse, we will air it here on Skull. So we're all about that. And well, anyway, thank you very much for your time here on the show.
No problem. Thank you so much for having us on here.
It's not great at all. And we've been talking to Amanda from Blank Verse, and we'll be right back here at CITR 101.9 FM.
Project Space presents the second annual Vancouver Art Book Fair, a two-day festival of artists publishing in the heart of downtown at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Come immerse yourself in the awesomeness of books, magazines, zines, and printed ephemera. Artist talks, workshops, performances, panel discussions, and installations will provide you with a multi-sensory experience that expands beyond the printed page. Free and open to public, the event takes place on October 5th and 6th from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. For more information, visit VancouverArtBookFair.com.
And welcome back to us live at CITR 101.9 FM. And that was our interview with Amanda Konkin from Blank Verse. And you should really check them out. They're a really, really great web series and ongoing. And hopefully their cooperation with us here at CITR 101.9 FM will also be ongoing. Well, anyway, speaking of ongoing, longtime listeners, or at least listeners who can remember all the way back to last month, might remember that recently we were given an entire web series, an audio series, that is. We were given an entire audio series in the tradition of traditional radio dramas from the Golden Age of Radio. As a matter of fact, it is a reproduction of sorts of the original suspense series called, interestingly enough, Suspense. And we had an interview aired with some of the creators not too long ago, and one of the first episodes today, we're going to listen to another one of the episodes of the new Suspense. And coming up is the chronologically first episode of that particular series, Cool Air. So don't go away, sit back, relax, and enjoy the spoken word.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
You ask me to explain why I am afraid of a draft of cool air. Why I shiver more than others upon entering a cold room, and seem nauseated and repulsed when the chill of evening creeps through the heat of a mild autumn day. There are those who say I respond to cold, as others do to a bad odor, and I am the last to deny the impression. What I will do is to relate the most horrible circumstance I ever encountered, and leave it to you to judge whether or not this forms a suitable explanation of my peculiarity.
Just a minute! Can I help you?
Mrs. Gibbons?
Who wants to know?
I'm Agatha Howard. We spoke on the telephone earlier. About your room for rent?
Oh yeah! You're the writer, right?
Yes, ma'am. I work for a small magazine in Tin Pan Alley.
You must be a small magazine if you're looking for a room on this end of 14th Street.
Oh, Well, I think this is a lovely brownstone. The marble and woodwork. I'd guess it dates from the 1840s. Does it, Mrs.?
Yeah, Gidden? Probably. Come on, I'll show you the rooms. It's up on the fourth floor. You don't mind a little walking, do you?
No, of course not.
The neighborhood may not be much to look at, but I run a respectable establishment. No callers after 8 p.m. And if you have a young man in your room, the door stays open.
Oh, I'm sure that won't be a problem, Mrs. Gibbons.
Room's fully furnished, bath just down the hallway, linens changed every Tuesday. Now, if you want meals, it's an extra fin a week. Breakfast at 7 o'clock, dinner at 6. Lunch, you're on your own. Understand?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sure that will be just fine.
Well, this is it.
Oh, it's quite spacious.
You like it? Well, in that case, let's get you settled in.
Mrs. Gibbons, what's that sound?
Sound?
Yes, that sound, like a motor of some sort.
It's the gentleman upstairs, Dr. Munoz.
Dr. Munoz?
Yeah, a real live doctor, come all the way from Spain. He's been here for, going on 10 years now.
Is he a practicing physician?
Nah, he's retired. Though he does take care of folks in the building when they need it. Won't ever accept any money for it, either. Dr. Munoz is a perfect gentleman. Kind of a weird duck, though. You know that motor sound? It's some sort of refrigeration machine and runs on ammonia, I think. At least that's what I smell when I go past his rooms.
Really? Why, whatever for? It's a very temperate spring day.
I'm not sure. Something to do with his illness. Can't stand the heat. So he's got that big refrigeration gizmo and takes some sort of funny-smelling chemical baths.
Oh, that poor man.
Oh, but don't worry. You won't catch as much as a whiff of him down here. And Dr. Munoz is as quiet as a mouse. The motor's not that loud. You'll get used to it before you know it.
I'm sure there won't be any trouble at all.
So, you'll take the room?
Yes. Yes, I will, Mrs. Gibbons.
You won't regret it, Miss Howard. Now, let's get you settled in.
Over the following weeks, Mrs. Gibbons' assessment proved to be quite accurate. For whatever the noisome chemicals might have been used by Dr. Munoz in the treatment of his illness, I was never able to discern them amidst the myriad of other odors in the boarding house. And he was indeed most quiet. His footfalls were soft and measured, and he appeared to have no visitors other than a delivery boy who brought him groceries on occasion. The solitude in which the Spanish physician lived was an almost palpable thing. Or perhaps it simply seemed that way because it so closely mirrored my own. For just as Dr. Munoz was isolated by his unnamed malady, I found myself alone in New York through a combination of natural timorousness and the asthmatic attacks from which I suffered at frequent intervals. It was one such attack, more violent than usual, that caused me to first make the acquaintance of Dr. Munoz.
Yes? Who is it?
My name is Agatha Howard. I live just below you. I need help.
Please, come in, Miss Howard. You are having trouble breathing. Do you suffer from asthma?
Yes.
I have a draft that should be most efficacious. Please, sit, Miss Howard. Breathe this in as deeply as you can. After a few moments, it will become easier. And here, wrap yourself in this blanket to ward off the chill.
Thank you, Doctor.
Shh. Now just breathe while I take your pulse. I beg your pardon, Miss Howard. I sometimes forget how chilling my touch must be.
It's quite all right, Dr. Munoz. And besides, it is I who owe you an apology, coming at such a late hour.
No apology is necessary, Miss Howard. Illness does not consult the hands of a clock. In any event, I sleep but little. A consequence of my own ailment.
Yes, Mrs. Gibbons mentioned that you have an aversion to warmth?
No, not an aversion, Miss Howard. For I deeply miss the wave-lapped shores of my native Valencia. The sensation of the late-day sun on my cheeks. No, I do not prefer the chill of these rooms, except in comparison to the alternative.
The alternative?
Oblivion, Miss Howard. For my condition requires me to avoid sunlight entirely, and to maintain temperatures not to exceed 55 degrees. And so, here I must remain.
Oh. Well, your rooms are sumptuous. You appear to have an ample library, volumes in at least a half dozen different languages. And your collection of artwork is, oh, it is most impressive. Velázquez, Murillo, and that. Oh, why, that's a Goya.
As prisons go, this is a most comfortable one. But a prison nonetheless. You appear to be a most well-educated young woman, Miss Howard. Are you an artist?
A writer. For a small magazine. I just write copy part-time. I moved here after graduation in hopes of writing for a major publication. But it hasn't worked out that way, I'm afraid.
There is no need to be embarrassed or disheartened, Miss Howard. You are young and clearly courageous to have made your home here in pursuit of your dreams.
I suppose so, Doctor. Thank you. You must have a great measure of courage yourself, to have left Spain behind and come to a foreign land.
Alas, while our respective journeys have brought us both to New York, our ends are diametrically opposed. While you, Miss Howard, came here in pursuit of your dream, I sought to flee a nightmare.
A nightmare? What happened? My apologies, Dr. Munoz. That was an impolitic question.
It's quite all right, Miss Howard. The question was not impolitic, but the answer might be. Not long after the onset of my present condition, some 18 years ago, my wife passed away. After that, I wanted nothing more than to put an ocean's distance between myself and Valencia, in the hope that I could leave the memories of what had transpired behind. A vain hope, as it turned out.
Your wife? Oh, I am so sorry, Doctor.
So am I, Miss Howard. So am I. But I do thank you for your concern.
Of course, Doctor.
How are you feeling?
Much better, Dr. Munoz. Again, I am most grateful, and I apologize for disturbing you at this hour.
Not at all, Miss Howard.
Thank you, Doctor. I should like to call upon you again, if you wouldn't mind.
Mind? That would be a great delight for me. You are welcome here at any time.
Well then, until later, Dr. Munoz.
Until later, Miss Howard.
Whether my initial impulse to befriend the invalid physician was driven by pity for his plight or by my own feelings of loneliness soon became a moot point. For as frail as his body was, his intellect remained unaffected. Dr. Munoz was nothing less than brilliant, capable of conversing most eloquently on all manner of subjects. Literature, politics, philosophy, the arts, the very nature of existence. And though the permeating chill of his rooms never ceased to leave me with a sense of foreboding, not wholly explainable by the readings of the thermometer, the man's gentle nature abated my fears in large measure. After some 6 weeks of nightly visitations with Dr. Munoz, I summoned sufficient courage to query the courtly Spaniard about one subject in particular, a certain medical theory that he had mentioned in passing.
Well, I am delighted to hear that your editor is finally recognizing your skills. You very much deserve the opportunity to write your own articles, Miss Howard.
Thank you, Dr. Munoz. Doctor, there is something I have been meaning to ask you.
My dear Miss Howard, you may ask me anything you wish to know.
Well, in a number of our conversations, you have alluded to the strength of the human will and how through properly directed concentration, virtually any malady could be overcome. You seem unusually certain that your theory is correct, Dr. Munoz.
Indeed, I am, Miss Howard. In point of fact, it is as a direct result of said theory that I am here today.
What? You mean...
Before the onset of the great illness 18 years ago, the one which led to my current state, I had been engaged in research with an esteemed colleague, Dr. Torres. I was absolutely convinced that the key to eradicating sickness was to be found in the human mind. So, we began researches that encompassed not just the latest in modern medical and psychological knowledge, but all manner of arcane lore, from pharaonic Egypt to snow-shrouded Tibet. We discovered that there were alternative means of preserving the nerves, the very body, and that therefore it might even be possible to continue existence even if the internal organs themselves were to fail. At length, I was convinced that we had discerned the key to prolonging life itself.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am most serious, Miss Howard. Our theories were soon put to the test by my own illness. Dr. Torres, although agreeing with certain of my conclusions, disagreed vehemently with other, more radical ideas. So, it was left to my beloved wife to assist me when my condition had deteriorated to an extent that left me incapable of even speaking. Thanks to her ministrations, I was able to regain the majority of my previous health, with the only side effect being my utter lack of tolerance for temperatures in excess of 55 degrees. However, strain was too much for her, I'm afraid.
Oh, I am so sorry, Dr. Munoz. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Oh, no need to apologize, Miss Howard. Not an hour goes by that I don't think of her. And nothing that you or anyone else could say would make it more difficult. That said, I'm feeling rather more fatigued than usual this evening. Would you mind terribly if we adjourned a bit early?
No. No, not at all, Doctor.
Thank you, Miss Howard. You are most dear. Perhaps tomorrow we will have some news of your first assignment.
I certainly hope so.
Well, I look forward to hearing of your impending good fortune. Until tomorrow, Miss Howard.
Until tomorrow, Dr. Munoz. Over the ensuing weeks, as we advanced further into summer, it became apparent that Dr. Munoz was slowly but unmistakably deteriorating. The livid aspect of his countenance was intensified. His voice became more hollow and indistinct. His muscular motions were less perfectly coordinated. Of this sad change, he seemed by no means unaware. A state of affairs that made his plight all the more pitiable. At the same time, I also experienced no small measure of guilt, for though our friendship continued unabated, I could not help but fear a sense of subtle revulsion every time I stepped through his door and was met with a blast of increasingly chilled air.
Ah, Miss Howard, please come in.
Hello, Doctor. I was able to procure those exotic spices for you. Where would you like them?
Oh, excellent. On the table, if you please.
What is that, Dr. Munoz? Incense?
Indeed, it is. A particular Egyptian incense, identical in formula to that found in the vaults of the Valley of Kings. Just another part of my obsession with becoming a sepulchred pharaoh. The incense used by the pharaohs was said to have certain preservative qualities. Qualities that I hope will be of benefit in regards to my own condition. I realize that the aroma must be most pungent, particularly given your asthmatic spells. For this, I do most sincerely apologize.
Oh, it's not so bad. Do you think that the incense and these spices I purchased will alleviate some of your, difficulties?
Yes. I believe they will help. And, in truth, they cannot make my situation any more dire than it already is. The incense and spices, the chemical baths, they will be of some small help in the preservation of my tissues and organs. But the key is in the regulation of temperature, and I fear that I'm nearing the end of what can be done. As you have no doubt noticed, I have slowly been lowering the temperature in my rooms. As of this moment, it is 48 degrees. Eventually, I will reach a limit to what can be accomplished by means of refrigeration.
But what if we were to acquire an even more efficient refrigeration machine? One that could lower the temperatures even further.
Unfortunately, the limitation is not in the machinery, but within my own fleshly shell. At a prolonged temperature below 32 degrees, the bodily fluids themselves will freeze solid.
Oh, so how long do you have?
I am uncertain. 6 months? At the very least, perhaps much longer, should my condition stabilize.
Do you think that it might stabilize over time?
It has in the past, and it may do so again. And in any event, there is little else that can be done.
Dr. Munoz, I hate to ask this, but are there any arrangements you would like me to make? I'll help in any way I can.
All of my arrangements were made 18 years ago. But I do thank you for your offer, Miss Howard.
Not at all.
But enough of these things. Please, allow me to offer you some supper. And then you can tell me of your latest good fortune in the magazine trade.
Thank you, Doctor. I would like that. The end came in the middle of August, during a heat wave of stupefying intensity. One night, at around 3 o'clock, I was awakened by the sound of Dr. Munoz rapping frantically on the floorboards. Dressing with all haste, I rushed upstairs to find that his refrigeration machine, the one thing that stood between him and the grim specter of death, had ceased to function. The elegant physician's condition was deteriorating rapidly, and he refused to even allow me entry. So I resolved to find a mechanic competent to repair the device and to provide Dr. Munoz with a supply of ice as a stopgap measure until repairs were effected.
Keep your shirt on. Who's there?
Mrs. Gibbons, it's me, Agatha Howard.
Sister, you better have a good reason for getting me out of my bed at this time of night.
Is there a mechanic in the building?
What?
A mechanic! Dr. Munoz's refrigeration machine has failed, and if he doesn't get it repaired soon, he could die.
Oh, well, there's Charlie Crowley. He's a car mechanic. Lives right across the hall. But he ain't gonna be too happy about getting up at 3 a.m.
Please, please, hurry!
What in the world? Hey, do you know what time it is?
Mr. Crowley, please. I need your help. It's a matter of life and death.
Okay, calm down. What seems to be the trouble, miss?
Dr. Munoz, on the top floor, he's a very sick man. He has this refrigeration machine, and it stopped working. Please, please, can you repair it?
Well, can't it wait till morning? I have to be up at 6 o'clock, so...
No! Without the device to keep him cold, Dr. Munoz will die!
All right, I'll take a look at it. Just let me grab some tools.
Thank you, Mr. Crowley.
Is Charlie gonna fix it?
Yes, he just went upstairs right now. But until the repairs are completed, I'll try to keep Dr. Munoz cool with ice. Do you know where I can find a sufficient supply?
At this hour? Well, you could try the Fulton Fish Market. Now, they keep the fish packed on ice, right? So they could probably spare a couple blocks for a good cause and should be open pretty soon, too.
Oh, that's an excellent suggestion, Mrs. Gibbons. Thank you. I'll go there right now. Oh, Mr. Crowley, is the machine working again?
The piston arm is shot, the piston itself is seized. It's going to require a complete rebuild.
What? No. No, how long will that take?
Probably half a day. I mean, I can't even start without the parts.
Well, can you get them?
What, now? It's special equipment. I can't just get it from my garage. You have to find the new piston assembly at a supply house, and even if you knew where one was, it's not going to be open for hours yet.
But Dr. Munoz doesn't have hours.
Look, I... Miss, I'm just a mechanic. I'm not a miracle worker. If you get the parts, I'll install them, but I can't make them appear out of thin air.
All right, I'll get the parts. Mrs. Gibbons, can someone go to the fish market and procure as much ice as possible?
Well...
Mrs. Gibbons, please!
I guess I can have my husband get the ice. Hiram!
I'll get back as soon as I can. The rest of that morning was a blur of subway transfers and cab rides over the whole of Manhattan. Frantic pleas to supply house owners to open early and check their inventories. One disappointment after another. It wasn't until nearly noon that I had acquired the necessary parts and returned to the boarding house. What I found there will remain seared in my memory until the end of my days. Mrs. Gibbons? What's going on?
Oh, merciful heavens!
Dr. Munoz, is he all right?
All right? All right?
Mrs. Gibbons!
Just after you left, I sent my Hiram to the fish market like we planned. Well, he had a little trouble there. Oh, they were willing enough to give up some ice. But getting it back here was another thing altogether. But finally... Hiram was able to borrow a hand truck and brought a 50-pound block back. But when he went upstairs to Dr. Munoz, oh, merciful heavens, oh, what he saw!
What? What, Mrs. Gibbons, what did he see?
Hiram, now, he fought in the Great War, and he saw some terrible, terrible things. But this doctor, it was like he was falling all to pieces, and the skin dropping right off his bones, and the stench. The whole floor smelled of rot like a charnel house, and Hiram came bounding down the steps, screaming like some banshee about what he's seen, and that's all I got out of him before he bolted out the front door, and he ain't been back since. Dear God, don't go up there! Don't go up there!
What I found in Dr. Munoz's room was this. A kind of dark, slimy trail led from the open bathroom door to the hall door, and thence to the desk, where a terrible little pool had accumulated. Something was scrawled there in an awful blind hand on a piece of paper hideously smeared, as though by the very claws that traced the hurried last words. Then the trail led to the couch, where it ended unutterably. What was or had been on the couch, I cannot and dare not say. But this is what I shiveringly puzzled out on the stickily smeared paper before I drew a match and burned it to a crisp.
Oh, the end is here. No ice. The men took one look and ran away. Warmer every minute, and the tissues can't last. I fancy you know what I said about the will and the nerves. And the preserved body, after the organs ceased to work. It was good theory, but couldn't keep up indefinitely. There was a gradual deterioration I had not foreseen. My wife realized it, and the shock killed her. She couldn't stand what she had to do. She had to get me in a strange, dark place. When she followed my written instructions and nursed me back, and the organs never would work again. It had to be done my way. Artificial preservation. For you see, I died that time 18 years ago.
So ends Cool Air by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by H.P. Lovecraft. Adrian Wilkinson was Agatha Howard. Damon Krall was Dr. Munoz. Dana Perry Hayes was Mrs. Gibbons, and Christopher Duva was Charlie Crowley. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you loved and deserted you, that makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue. Right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Yes, how he feels, but blues ain't nothing but a man. Good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
And welcome back to us here live at CITR 101.9 FM. And that's just about all of the time that we have here today for us at Skults Hall in beautiful Vancouver. I am your host, Brian McDonald. Tune in next week at 1 o'clock on Friday for our next show at Skults Hall. And coming up next, we have scheduled Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. So have a good weekend.
Myths and misconceptions about masturbation have existed for centuries, yet it is a normal